Introductions completed, the consul cleared his throat and turned toward the Templar.
Hetmastine, you said that there were 7 pilgrims. Is M. Weintraub's child the 7th?
Hetmastine's hood moved slowly from side to side.
No, only those who make a conscious decision to seek the Shrike may be counted among the pilgrims.
The group at the table stirred slightly. Each must know what the consul knew. Only a group comprising a prime number of pilgrims might make the Shrike church-sponsored trip north.
I am the 7th,
said Hetmastine, captain of the Templar tree ship Yggdrasil, and true voice of the tree. In the silence which followed the announcement, Hetmastine gestured, and a group of crew clones began serving the pilgrims their last meal before planetfall.
So the ousters are not in system yet?
Asked Braun Lamia. Her voice had a husky, throaty quality which strangely stirred the consul.
No,
said Hetmastine.
But we cannot be more than a few standard days ahead of them. Our instruments have detected fusion skirmishes within the system's Oort cloud.
Will there be a war?
Asked Father Hoyt. His voice seemed as fatigued as his expression. When no one volunteered a response, the priest turned to his right, as if retroactively directing the question to the consul. The consul sighed. The crew clones had served wine. He wished it had been whiskey.
Who knows what the ousters will do? They no longer appear to be motivated by human logic.
Martin Silenus laughed loudly, spilling his wine as he gestured.
As if we fucking humans were ever motivated by human logic.
He took a deep drink, wiped his mouth, and laughed again. Braun Lamia frowned.
If the serious fighting starts too soon, perhaps the authorities will not allow us to land.
We will be allowed to pass,
said Hetmastine. Sunlight found its way past folds in his cowl to fall on yellowish skin.
Saved from certain death in war, to be delivered to certain death at the hands of the Shrike,
murmured Father Hoyt.
There is no death in all the universe,
intoned Martin Silenus, in a voice which the consul felt sure could have awakened someone deep in cryogenic fugue. The poet drained the last of his wine and raised the empty goblet in an apparent toast to the stars.
No smell of death. There shall be no death. Moan, 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 Cybele, moan, for thy pernicious babes have changed a god into a shaking palsy. Moan, brethren, moan, for I have no strength left. Weak as the reed. Weak, feeble as my voice. Oh, oh, the pain of feebleness. Moan. Moan, for still I thaw.
Silenus abruptly broke off and poured more wine, belching once into the silence which had followed his recitation. The other 6 looked at one another. The consul noticed that Saul Weintraub was smiling slightly until the baby in his arms stirred and distracted him.
Well,
said Father Hoyt hesitantly, as if trying to retrieve an earlier strand of thought.
If the hegemony convoy leaves and the ousters take Hyperion, perhaps the occupation will be bloodless and they'll let us go about our business.
Colonel Fedmon Kassad laughed softly.
The ousters don't want to occupy Hyperion. If they take the planet, they'll loot what they want, then do what they do best. They'll burn the cities into charred rubble, break the rubble into smaller pieces, and then bake the pieces until they glow. They'll melt the poles, boil the oceans, and then use the residue to salt what's left of the continents, so nothing will ever grow there again.
Well,
began Father Hoyt, and then trailed off. There was no conversation as the clones cleared the soup and salad dishes and brought on the main course.
You said that there was a hegemony warship escorting us.
the consul said to Hetmastine as they finished their roast beef and boiled sky squid. The Templar nodded and pointed. The consul squinted, but could make out nothing moving against the rotating starfield.
"Here,"
said Fedmon Kassad, and leaned across Father Hoyt to hand the consul a collapsible pair of military binoculars. The consul nodded his thanks, thumbed on the power, and scanned the patch of sky Hetmastine had indicated. Gyroscopic crystals in the binoculars hummed slightly as they stabilized the optics and swept the area in a programmed search pattern. Suddenly the image froze, blurred, expanded, and steadied. The consul could not avoid an involuntary intake of breath as the hegemony ship filled the viewer. Neither the expected field-blurred seed of a solo ram scout nor the bulb of a torch ship. The electronically outlined image was of a matte-black attack carrier. The thing was impressive in the way only warships through the centuries had succeeded in being. The hegemony spin ship was incongruously streamlined, with its four sets of boom arms retracted in battle readiness, its 60-meter command probe sharp as a Clovis point, and its Hawking drive and fusion blisters set far back along the launch shaft like feathers on an arrow. The consul handed the binoculars back to Kassad without comment. If the task force was using a full attack carrier to escort the Yggdrasil, what kind of firepower were they setting in place to meet the ouster invasion?
"How long until we land?"
asked Braun Lamia. She had been using her comm log to access the tree ship's datasphere, and obviously was frustrated with what she had found, or had not found.
4 hours until orbit,"
murmured Hetmastine.
"A few minutes more by dropship. Our consular friend has offered his private craft to ferry you down."
"To Keats,"
said Saul Weintraub. It was the first time the scholar had spoken since dinner had been served. The consul nodded.
"It's still the only spaceport on Hyperion set to handle passenger vehicles."
"Spaceport?" Father Hoyt sounded angry. "I thought that we were going straight to the north, to the Shrike's realm."
Hetmastine patiently shook his head.
"The pilgrimage always begins from the capital. It will take several days to reach the Time Tombs."
"Several days?"
snapped Braun Lamia.
"That's absurd."
"Perhaps,"
agreed Hetmastine.
"But it is the case, nonetheless."
Father Hoyt looked as if something in the meal had caused him indigestion, even though he had eaten almost nothing.
"Look," he said, "couldn't we change the rules this once? I mean, given the war scare and all? And just land near the Time Tombs or wherever and get it over with?"
The consul shook his head.
"Spacecraft and aircraft have been trying to take the short route to the northern moors for almost 400 years. I know of none who made it."
"May one inquire?"
said Martin Silenus, happily raising his hand like a schoolboy.
"Just what the gibbering fuck happens to these legions of ships?"
Father Hoyt frowned at the poet. Fedmon Kassad smiled slightly. Saul Weintraub said,
"The consul did not mean to suggest that the area is inaccessible. One may travel by ship or various land routes. Nor do spacecraft and aircraft disappear. They easily land near the ruins or the Time Tombs, and just as easily return to whatever point their computers command. It is merely the pilots and passengers who were never seen again."
Weintraub lifted the sleeping baby from his lap and set her in an infant carrier slung around his neck.
"So the tired old legend goes,"
said Braun Lamia.
"What do the ship logs show?"
"Nothing. No violence, no forced entry, no deviation from course, no unexplained time lapses, no unusual energy emissions or depletions. No physical phenomena of any sort."
"No passengers."
The consul did a slow double take. If Hetmastine had indeed just attempted a joke, it was the first sign in all of the consul's decades of dealing with the Templars that one of them had shown even a nascent sense of humor. What the consul could see of the captain's vaguely oriental features beneath the cowl gave no hint that a joke had been attempted.
Marvelous melodrama,
laughed Silenus.
A real-life, Christ-weeping Sargasso of souls, and we're for it. Who orchestrates this shit-pot of a plot, anyway?
Shut up. You're drunk, old man.
The consul sighed. The group had been together for less than a standard hour. Crew clones swept away the dishes and brought dessert trays, showcasing sherbets, coffees, tree-ship fruits, drams, torts, and concoctions made of Renaissance chocolate. Martin Silenus waved away the desserts and told the clones to bring him another bottle of wine. The consul reflected a few seconds and then asked for a whiskey.